I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. Julie Morgenstern is a professional organizer and time management expert, but she didn't start out that way. She was notoriously disorganized, lived in a constant state of chaos, was chronically late. She didn't just lose her car keys, she once lost someone's car. She thought she was invincible until she had a baby and realized that her disorganization was not good for her child. She began small but important organizing the diaper bag. Since that time, Julie Morgenstern has written a number of best-selling books about managing your life with a focus on organizing your stuff and your time. Her most recent book is Time to Parent, Organizing Your Life to Bring Out the Best in Your Child and You. She has advice about how to establish a morning routine, how to delegate tasks, how to be a selectively perfect parent, how to manage distractions and the impulse to procrastinate, and much more. Julie Morgenstern was a guest on Radio Times more than 20 years ago when her very first book came out, and she joins us once again. Julie, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's great to be here with you, Marty.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email with your questions or comments, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So is time the new clutter?
Time is. I mean, time is probably, it's a really good way of putting it. It's just we are pulled in so many directions all the time. And people don't know. It's like we're kind of kids in a candy shop. We're so overwhelmed with the choices that we get paralyzed. There's huge amounts of procrastination just for fear of making the wrong decision. It's like, I don't know what's most important. Let me just check my email, or let me just go, you know, and it is so paralyzing for people, and they need like a clarity and tools to cut through the clutter
of their lives. Exactly.
And be focused. Yeah.
Is this though, have we done this to ourselves? And you mentioned choice, and I think there is a lot of choice, and it can be very distracting.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
It's such a good question. Have we done it to ourselves? If you think about our evolution as people in society, there were the invention of appliances in the 50s that were going to save all this time, right? And so now you can have a blender and you can have a this and that, and everything's going to make, so that what? So that the aspiration was so that you could relax more. But what did we do with all the time saved?
We worked, yes.
We put it into work. There is this work ethic, the do ethic, does not allow time for and really value decompression, self-care. It just doesn't. Our society in the U.S. doesn't really value that. It's ambition. And so we've done that. And so then technology came along and saved us time, right? We didn't have to wait for things to get mailed and show up. And now everything is instantaneous, and we are on our devices 24/7. And the world is operating 24/7. And we're addicted to these devices. And that steals time from being present for anything that we want to do. I think that's the biggest obstacle. I predict.
Our cell phones, our email.
Yeah, the technology, our screen addiction. I say in 50 years, we're going to look back at this time and call the corn syrup of our generation. It's like, how do we let that happen to us? This stuff is addictive and not really good for us.
In your book, there's a little bag where you can put your cell phone. I mean, what do you suggest people do? And here I am facing two screens here.
Yeah.
You know, my cell phone is at my desk. I've got another screen there. I've got my iPad. I've got all my technology around me, which I use and I need.
Yes.
But at the same time, it can be a time sink.
It can be, you sort of said it, you can use it. If you're proactively using technology for good purposes to get things done that you need to do, it's very powerful and does amazing things for us. You just need to control the when. And you want to get away from mindlessly being on your screens because you can't think of anything else to do, or because you're so overwhelmed with your choices that, let me just check my email, or let me just go online. So I think it's about using it mindfully and selectively. And the phone bag, the little phone pouch that I made that says "Be here now" on it,
exactly,
is really just designed to like put your cell phone into this pouch whenever you want to be present for anything you're doing, reading a book, even something you're working on one screen, not be checking on another, cooking, being with your kid, being with your sandwich at lunch, just being present.
I don't want to spend the whole time on phones, although we could do that because
yeah,
it is such a use of our time. But there is something very Pavlovian about having a phone that beeps and rings and makes little noises. And it's, you know, that impulse to go and grab it. And also that sense, and I feel this, of losing time. I mean, I can be checking my Twitter on my way home on the train, and next thing I know, I'm at my stop and I just was there for 45 minutes.
Yeah, you were there. I think that the first thing we all need to do is stop checking our devices in the in-between moments. That's the place to stop. When you're focused, that's one thing. But the in-between moments, instead of checking your Instagram or whatever it is that you are drawn to, just sit there and pay attention on the subway or the bus to the faces around you or to the thoughts in your head. Or to think about what happened in your work day, or set your intention for when you get home, what do you want to convey when you walk through the door? So use the in-between time differently. That would be the first way to gain a grip on technology. You use it for its power, but don't fall into its greedy little hands.
Let's talk about children, kids, and they're very much a part of this book. And you say an interesting thing, which is that consistent care and secure attachment, obviously that's the goal of parenting, mm-hmm. but that 15 minutes of undivided attention to a child, and that means undivided attention, can go a long way.
A huge way. I think that was the biggest discovery when I wrote this book, Time to Parent, which was really designed to help parents manage the conflicting priorities of the parenting years where you just don't, whatever you're doing, you feel like you're neglecting something else. And I have a lot of organizing and time management experience, but I was not a parenting expert. And I thought, I can't advise parents on how to allocate their time unless I know how much time kids need. I need to go to the experts for that. And I researched, and my question was, how much time and attention do children need to feel loved and secure? Because that's what we all want to do for our kids. That's what we want to deliver. We don't know. And I studied that and looked for that, and it was hard to find the answer, but here's what it is. And it's very powerful and quite moving. Children thrive on short bursts of 5 to 15 minutes at a time of truly undivided attention delivered consistently, not big blocks of time delivered occasionally. And because kids have short attention spans, and many experts say calculate about a minute of attention span for each age of life. And if you think about that, just think about that, that makes so much sense. It never occurred to me when I was raising my daughter. I thought I had to give these big
24/7, right?
Oh my God. And I felt so bad as a working parent that when I came home, I felt I had to be all on from the time I walked through the door till she was asleep. Undivided attention constantly to make up for that. That is not what kids need. And if you just give them these short bursts, and I think you do it at the key transition points of the day. The key is the timing of it too, which is at each reconnection point with your kid every day when they first wake up in the morning. Right? When you send them off to school, when you get home at the end of the day, dinner, bedtime. If the first 5 to 15 minutes of each re-encounter, you give your kid your undivided attention, then they feel satisfied. They feel important. They know they can rely on, hey, when my mom or dad or caretaker, grandmother, whatever sees me, they're so happy to see me and I matter. Then you can go to Together But Apart time. And that's really what kids thrive on. It's the short bursts.
And part of those bursts isn't, did you do your homework?
Exactly. It is absolutely
because
not.
Because that is the, you know, the impulse.
It is the impulse. And there's a really big difference. I worked with a client who, she had an 8-year-old. I actually interviewed her on my podcast, which is a great episode. People really loved it. And she had this 8-year-old. And this mom was so organized. And from the time she got home till her daughter went to bed, she walked through the door and she wanted to make sure her kid got to bed by 9 o'clock. So she was like Hi, Claudia. Did you do your homework? Practice your piano? Did you have your snack? What's on the table? And it was just, and her daughter, she just felt like she wasn't connected to her daughter at all. And I said, why don't you take the first 15 minutes to just walk through the door and say, hey, how was your day? Tell me what happened. And she did that, and literally, instantly, her daughter like just sort of melted. And they went from 3 hours of tension every night for almost 8 years to like, hey, her daughter just felt important. And then she got to bed on time with no stress.
So something to think about.
It's something to think about. I think it's a small change. And parents are very, listen, it's the hardest job in the world to be a parent. It is so, to most time stretched years of our lives. And I think we make the mistake as we're switching to not actually switch between the different roles we're playing. So if you just think before you cross any threshold.
And like, literally, that could be the door threshold, right?
I really mean the threshold.
Right.
I mean before you cross the threshold, when you're coming home at the end of the day, before you walk through that door, take a minute, take 5 minutes, and set your intention for the other side. Don't carry your stuff from work over that threshold, because there's people on the other side who have been waiting to see you all day, right? And after you put the kids to bed, if you're going to go hang out with your significant other, before you cross the threshold to that living room, set your intention and leave. You put the kids to bed, that's done, and you're entering adult world now. And those little switches do not take a lot of time in your day, but they make all the time you're spending intentional.
What do you say to yourself? I mean, as you're going through that transition, are you saying, are you just taking a breath? Are you being mindful? How do you make the from point A to point B?
I think what you're saying to yourself is you're really asking, what is my intention? What do I want to achieve on the other side of that door? So if you're going to go and hang out with your spouse after the kids have gone to bed and you're exhausted, but you have 20 minutes before you guys both fall asleep, what's my intention? I want to check in with my wife or my husband and let them know I love them and see how their day was and just have 20 minutes of like loving connection. That's all I want. I don't want to try to get the to-do list figured out. I don't want to talk about kids stuff. I want to connect as adults. That's it.
We're almost up on a break here. You also talk about during the day just those little moments of texting or emailing or a quick phone call to stay connected to that other person, assuming there is another person in the picture.
Yeah. If you have a significant other, if you're married, it's so hard to stay connected as a couple when you are raising kids. And it's called daily glue. And if you take 3 to 5 times during the day to 5-minute check-ins, text, quick call, FaceTime, you can just keep up with what's going on each other's day, and you have less to catch up on at night because there's never enough time to catch up at night.
Julie Morgenstern is our guest, and she's got a relatively new book. Just came out a couple of months ago called Time to Parent, Organizing Your Life to Bring Out the Best in Your Child and You. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. With so many busy schedules for both adults and children, we're talking about how to find that balance between being a healthy individual and an attentive parent and how difficult it can be to find that balance, but also things to think about to get there. And Julie Morgenstern, our guest, author of Time to Parent. And you can send us a tweet if you want to join our conversation at WHYY Radio Times. Reading your book and even listening to you now, we've done several shows actually about shift workers. Mm-hmm. And these are often people working minimum wage or just a little bit above minimum wage. They don't necessarily know what their schedule is going to be tomorrow or sometimes even the day of. They've got children, they've got daycare, they've got, you know, all the things that they're trying to juggle and balance in their life. How do we take what you're saying and apply it to those people?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, there's two pieces to this. There's taking care of your kids and there's taking care of yourself while working shift work. How do you do that? And taking care of the house. The key thing to remember is What kids need is predictability, and they need consistency. So all that means is that they need to know what to expect. If your shifts change, as long as you tell your kid the day before, here's my schedule tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm going to be able to take you to school, but I'm not going to be picking you up, and I'm not going to even be there until after dinner or you're asleep. But I will be there in the morning when you wake up. If you let them know what to expect, even if it changes, that's what the experts say kids need. They just need to know what to predict, because then they can save up their stories. They're like, I'm not going to see mom until this time, but I know I'm going to see her at that time. So as long as they know what to expect, they can titrate and they feel safe. The second thing is, when you reconnect with your kid, just make sure, no matter how tired you are, and you may be exhausted, take that beat and just show your kid how happy you are to see them, because they've been waiting. I can't tell you how many people tell me, teachers have told me, how their heart breaks when parents come to pick their kids up from school and the kid is just waiting for the parent to come, and the parent shows up and is on the phone and puts their finger up because they're trying to finish something. They're probably trying to get a doctor's appointment scheduled.
Sure.
But so you just want to be able to connect. And the other thing for shift workers, I think that's really, really important, and this is important for all parents, but particularly a parent who is like working so many hours, you must build a village as a parent. You must. And we really have this idea we're the only ones who can do things or do things right or be there for our kids. And you need to be able to build a really strong village for not just the child care of people that your kid can rely on, but also help with all the logistics of life. Because when you work hard, the household logistics can take you down. It's just a much bigger, more complex job to make sure the house is clean and there's food in the fridge and food on the table and all the logistics of life. So get as much help as you can for all those, so that your time is free for connecting with your kids and resting yourself.
Resting. Oh my God, what a novel idea.
Well, we don't do it enough as parents, and we feel guilty. I think parents don't do self-care for two reasons. Enormous guilt. There's like a belief that we're supposed to sacrifice everything for our kids. And if we take time for ourselves, we are stealing it from our kids or we're stealing it from our jobs. And that's really wonky thinking, because we need our energy. But the other thing that I think I realized when I was writing the book, I was like, you know, it's not just guilt that keeps us. We never, as parents, ever change our approach to self-care from the way we did it before we had kids. So before you have kids, hobbies were like all day, Saturday and Sunday. And relationships were like hours and hours and hours on end into the wee hours of the morning. Exercise was 90 minutes three times a week. You don't get those big blocks of time as an adult with kids. So instead of, but don't go all or nothing on this. It's not like if I can't go to the gym three times a week, I'm not going to exercise at all. Why not do like a 8-minute workout every morning from YouTube, right? That you are doing some fitness and getting your heart rate going every morning for 8 minutes. Every parent can find time for that. So you want to change the texture of self-care as a parent to like 20-minute doses or less.
You say, and it's very true, that there is no one job description for being a parent, and there isn't, and people are going to parent the way they're going to parent. But you had a really interesting practical idea, which is have a family meeting, hand out index cards, and figure out who does what. First of all, who does what in the home? Who's doing the vacuuming? Who loads the dishwasher or washes the dishes? And on and on from there.
Yeah.
And pass the cards around as a kind of reality check, like who's doing what in this household?
Yeah, as I call it, putting the cards on the table. And if you do that, it's the thing about the housework and it's sort of the bane of most. There's some family member, usually the woman, honestly, that is the default organizer, arranger for the house. And she becomes a nag, and the kids are nagged, and the husbands are nagged, and it's just terrible. And no one's really aware of how much work it takes. The work just gets done. but it is a huge emotional burden for women and a logistical one. So, yeah, put all the cards on the table. It's a fascinating, fascinating exercise. And I'll tell you, the people who don't have a big stack of cards in front of
right.
them.
There it is, right?
They feel bad. They don't realize it. I really don't think people who are not picking up after themselves are thinking about it as, oh, I'm putting something on someone else's to-do list, which is really what's happening. When you don't put the dishes away, you're putting something on someone else's to-do list that they're busy already. Who has extra time? So, but they're not thinking about that. They're just moving on to the next thing. They're not conscious. And this exercise makes it so visible. And logistics is not any one person's job. It is the family's job. This is the family's logistics. It's not one person's.
Hmm.
It's a mindset shift.
That raises questions about delegating and giving up control and, you know, all the things that come with all those responsibilities. Is that hard for people to do?
It is hard for people to do. I think, you know, the big trap is by the time I explain it, I could have done it myself. I'm so busy. Or, you know, they never get it right. They don't stack the dishwasher properly. And so I think, but if you keep hoarding all the work for that reason, you will never find time to connect with your kids, to connect with your significant other and your friends, and you will never have time to rest. And that's critical for going the distance and making this joyful. It really is. And it's an unnecessary distraction. So what do? I think that the key when you're doing a family system is to remember this is a multi-user system.
Mm.
And it should be designed as a multi-user system, which means make every system so simple a kindergartner could follow it. Where the dishes go, how things get stacked, how the laundry's done, what meals we make. And if you keep it really simple and not fancy, and you change the mindset that this is the family's logistics, it's a lot easier to delegate. And don't care if it's not perfect, because perfect isn't even that hard to get to. It's kind of simple. Right. This is where the forks go.
Well, it raises several different questions. One is it sort of like thinking like a business in a way?
Oh, yeah. I do think that running a house, it's like chief operating officer it's like the operations team. And if the whole family is engaged as the team, what company has only one person doing that? There's an entire operations department. So get everybody involved in systems design and systems maintenance and actually change. It can be really fun. How do we do this? How do we do this in a way that makes it really easy for all of us to follow, that no matter who's doing it, it's done the same way? And kids love solving those problems. I mean, from the time of five up, they can absolutely engage in the design and even how are we going to hold each other accountable.
And to say, I did that.
Oh, yeah.
Or I thought of that.
They love that. Yeah, I thought of that. I did that. This was my solution. They're so proud of it. They like to solve problems, and everybody likes to make a contribution.
You write about, and I really like this, being a selectively perfect parent. I mean,
yeah.
There is that pressure to do everything right. Of course, that's impossible, but nonetheless, the pressure is there, the message is there. But selectively perfect, what do you mean by that?
So, you know, perfectionism is kind of all or nothing thinking, right? We think things are amazing or they were a disaster, shameful disaster, nothing in between. So I invented this strategy to break that black and white thinking into kind of shades of gray, and it's called Max Mod Min. So for any task that threatens to monopolize your time at the expense of everything else, like I could go really whole hog.
Yeah.
I could go whole hog on this and not come up for days. Or when you're really in a jam and you have to get something done and you're just paralyzed, like, oh my God, I don't have time to do this. First define three levels of performance for the task. So what's the maximum you could do here? What's the minimum you could do? And then what's the moderate?
Hmm.
And once you define three levels, it gives you the agility and choice to choose the level that's appropriate for the moment. Sometimes you'll have the time and the energy and the resources for max, and other times you do mod and other times you do min. And it's really helpful to, it's like right-size tasks for the situation, because situations change all the time, right? In life, you have time, you don't, you got enough sleep, you didn't, the kid got sick, but I still have to get dinner on the table. Let me do a min and not a max. There's so many applications for this max mod min. It's extremely liberating because you always have choices.
And it's assigning, I guess, what, a value or importance to the task at hand?
Yeah, I don't know if it's just that. It's more like this. Think about like a kid's birthday party. Every parent can relate to this. Your kid has a birthday coming up, and you want to have a party. What's the max you could do? You can bake the cake from scratch in this shape with three dimensions of your kid's favorite cartoon character. You can have handmade favors that are personalized for every single guest. There can be a live music that you learn to play on and on and on. Okay, what's the minimum just on the cake? You can buy cupcakes or a sheet cake at the supermarket, or the mod might be that you bake a cake from scratch together with your kid. There's just that, right? So all three are fine. You just pick which one based on situation.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. And again, that's Julie Morgan Stern, our guest on Radio Times today. She wrote a book from Organizing from the Inside Out. In fact, was a guest on Radio Times more than 21 years ago talking about that book. And she's got a new one called Time to Parent, Organizing Your Life to Bring Out the Best in Your Child and You. Any questions or comments? And I think we're all in this boat together. You can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Is there a danger of being too organized? And by that, I mean having a routine that is such a taskmaster that if you get off that routine or things don't happen when you think that they should, the whole thing seems to fall apart or create such anxiety.
Yeah, I think that we all have to have a balance between it's organized enough. But I do think that the routines of life, what time we wake up, what time we have meals in a family system, okay, really in a family system when you're raising kids, the more routine and consistent those life basic functions are, the more room there is for spontaneity and freedom based on who had a good day, what kind of mood, whatever people need. It's when you don't have those systems, you're just spending all your time on systems or trying to put a meal on the table. Organizing can be so liberating, and structure can be so liberating. I mean, the whole principle of the book is there was no job description. There has never been a manual.
Nor should there be, within certain parameters.
I think there's no one way, there's no one value system for that parents should follow. But I do think to structure your time, I do think having some, I do propose a job description in the book. I do. And I say that, you know, like any job, an ambiguous job is a recipe for overwork, insecurity, and inefficiency in any job. If you don't know what your job is, any job feels infinite. And that's the way parents have been operating for generations. So I think if you add structure, this is the structure that I propose. You have to break the job into two parts, raising a human and being a human. Those are two different, equally important roles, because while we're raising our kids, we happen to be in the prime of our own adult development years. And no one talks about that.
The other side.
Well, when you're raising kids, you are establishing a career, you're building a marriage, you're getting to know who you are as an adult. Those things are happening in parallel, and you have to take care of both, because if you ignore your self part, everything falls apart and you really don't have it in you. You don't have the patience or the time or the creativity to be there for your kids. And then each one of those has four activities. And it took me a long time, but I was like, this is the job description of the parenting years. There's four things you have to do for your kid, activities, and there's four activities for yourself. And that happens to encapsulate everything you have to juggle your time between, just like any job. And it enables you to monitor, evaluate what you're paying attention to, where your strengths are, recognize them, where your weaknesses are, and like get better at them. I think that helps parents. Clarity. Job clarity helps. I don't mean, you know, you must put your kid to sleep in this particular way, but what your balance, it's the time balance that I've tried to define.
Well, in fact, you have a parenting time matrix: provide, arrange, teach, relate. Maybe not, you know, it depending on what order you want to put it in. And for parents, sleep, exercise, love, which can be community, and fun, relaxing, unwinding. I mean, just to kind of distill it all down.
Yeah, there's really, you know, queen of acronyms. There's PART, doing your part, P-A-R-T, provide, arrange, relate, teach for your kids, and fueling yourself, sleep, exercise, love, fun. And I think having that clarity, parents who've read this book or see me speak, they say that what it does is it allows them to be more present in each thing they're doing because they know where the edges are and they know where they are on the playing board. Like right now, I'm in provide mode.
Right
now, I'm in sleep mode, and that's a really important quadrant. I have to do it. I know it's going to help me. I'm in fun mode. I'm in teach mode. And knowing the distinction really helps parents stay clear, make sure that they cover everything, don't let anything go inadvertently because we have blind spots. And also not feel like that constant worry that whatever I'm doing, what am I missing?
Because I'm doing this, I'm not doing that. So what am I missing?
What am I missing? This sort of answers that question. You're not really missing anything. You're just here right now. And you know where to go next.
Let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Again, Julie Morgenstern is our guest. We're talking about her new book called Time to Parent, Organizing Your Life to Bring Out the Best in Your Child and You. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And if you're just joining us, our guest is Julie Morgenstern. She's got a new book called Time to Parent, Organizing Your Life to Bring Out the Best in Your Child and You. Any questions or comments to join our conversation, give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And we've been talking a lot about parents and children and that relationship and how to manage time, Julie. And I remember someone once telling me, a psychologist saying, really the best gift you can give your children is a healthy parental relationship or a healthy adult relationship. Seeing the adults in your life, so trying to sort of manage their own lives, but also having that kind of relationship with each other, but also with you. How do we fit that in with this sort of time matrix that we've been talking about?
Yeah. So, and you're talking about like that showing them what your friendships or your love relationships.
They're watching.
They
right?
are watching. Kids experience the world as an environment of relationships. So how they are treated by the caretakers in their life and how they watch the caretakers treat each other is how they navigate the world. It's all an environment of relationships. It's so important. So the time matrix. Here's the thing. So let's talk about the four things we have to balance our time between as parents. But what makes it really interesting, we have to provide for our kids. That takes time. You got to work, make money, manage money. You have to arrange the logistics of their lives. That takes a gazillion hours to figure out where they're going to go to school and how they're going to get there and what they eat for lunch and what we do on the weekends and who's doing the dishes. We have to relate to our kids, which is to get to know them for the individuals they are. And we have to teach our kids values and life skills so they're successful. That's what we have to do. Here's where it gets really interesting. I've always been fascinated by the frequent situation where you have parents who say, I sacrificed my entire life for my kids. And those kids say, my parents were never there for me.
Yes.
How does that happen?
Right.
All the time. How is that true? Here's how it's true. If you think of those four activities I just talked about, some of them are visible to our kids and some are invisible. And some take place in the adult world and some take place in the child's world. So provide, think of this like in a grid, like a quadrant, and the upper left quadrant, provide takes place in the adult world. But the time we spend is largely invisible to our kids.
Right. We're not there.
We're not there. A range takes place in your kids' world because they have lunch packed. But the time you spend arranging is largely invisible to your kids. They don't see you organizing all this stuff. You do it while they're asleep and when they're out and during your workday. Relate and teach are the two types of time that parents spend that are visible to kids. But even they are different. And when we realize their difference, it has more power. So when we are relating to our kids, we're entering our child's world. When we're teaching, we're bringing our kids into the adult world, and they are the student of us. When you're relating, you enter your child's world, and you are the student of the child. And for all the battles that take place between parent and child, every expert says, if you want to be able to teach, always start with relate. Hmm. That if you connect first in your kid's world, they will follow you. But if you just are teaching all the time, they shut down. They're like, you don't even understand me. Understand them first.
And right? then the teaching becomes more natural, becomes easier to do.
It becomes easier to do. My daughter, when I was raising her, at one point, she was coming home from school and watching Jerry Springer. I was like, oh, my God, my child is watching. Oh, my God.
You're dating yourself there.
Oh, I know. Sorry. But you guys, I'm sure. And I was just horrified. I could not. And I wanted to take her to a museum. I wanted to go to the park. I went, nope. Watching. And I could not get her out. So I finally just went in and started watching with her. And I sat next to her and I was like, what is this about the show that you are so compelled by? And she said, I'm just amazed at what people will do to be on television. And I was like, oh.
Bingo, right?
Yeah. So it's not that she thought that's how people should be, or she wasn't learning life's lessons from Jerry Springer. She was just fascinated at what people were willing to do. And once she knew I understood that and I was not judging it, then I was like, you want to go outside now? And she would follow me.
Wow.
So enter your kids' world if you want them to follow you.
Well, and certainly you hear the lament from a lot of parents that their kids, they just want to play video games all day.
I know.
And that's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
And you can say, well, you can do it for an hour or after you've done your homework. I mean, those seem to make sense to some degree.
You do have to limit it. And I actually talk about a couple things with that. One is you got to have synchronized screen time in your house.
Do it together?
Yes. Everybody's on screens at the same time and everybody is screen free at the same time. And that way there are pockets of time in the family evening and the weekend where no one's on screens and everybody's available to do things together and connect. And everybody also can be on screens at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I had my assistant actually came from Silicon Valley and she'd done a study on whether technology brings people closer together or further apart. And here was her insight, which I thought was brilliant.
We're all listening here. Right.
Technology brings you closer to people who are geographically far away, and it disconnects you from people who are geographically nearby.
Right. I mean, I live that myself.
So then if you just internalize that, then okay, we can use technology sometimes to connect to the people who are away. But for the people that are in front of us, we need screen-free zones. And the games, you got to like give it to them for a limited amount of time and play it with them sometimes. Yeah. Figure out what they're doing there.
You at one point suggest alarm clocks or an alarm clock. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, I think using a traditional alarm clock instead of a cell phone for your alarm. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is just, you know, I think that it's much better to start your day not on technology. And if you use your cell phone alarm as your alarm, what do? You hit the alarm and you check your email and you go online and you read the news and blah, 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 blah. If you just use a regular alarm and you just move your phone, it can still be in the room if somebody's going to call you, but away. When the alarm goes off, you can spend that first 10, 15, 20 minutes being present, taking a shower and feeling the water, drinking your coffee and actually tasting it. And then you can roll your shades up for business.
And that obviously raises the question about multitasking. I mean, just sort of feeling like, well, if I do everything all together, then I can get it all done. But
you
think science is telling us that it doesn't really work that way.
No, when we're doing multiple things at the same time, the switching costs, the brain can't switch efficiently between these different regions. And we lose enormous amounts of time. In fact, things take four times longer to execute when we are multitasking than when we are working sequentially. Four times longer. So it's a fallacy that you're getting more done in less time by multitasking. The opposite is true. When you're multitasking, you're getting less done in more time.
It seems like a lot of what you're talking about is attention. I mean, you know, I think many of us feel obviously distracted by all the things that are going on around us. And that ability to attend, to pay attention, either to your child as they're, you know, playing some game or to the task at hand.
Yeah, it is. It's about presence. I think we all crave it. We all crave it. We need to rebuild our capacity to be attentive. I do think doing it in 20-minute doses or less is doable for everybody. I don't think there's anybody listening who can't be off their device for 20 minutes. If it's an emergency, someone will call. And just rebuild your capacity to be present with your kid, with yourself. 20 minutes of rest, 10 minutes of sitting still in the middle of the day to recharge your batteries. Practice being present. And there's so many ways you can do it. I use a little like a sensory inventory to sort of when I feel my mind drifting, I realize I think this moment will never come again in my life. This is the only moment like this in my entire life. What do I see, hear, smell, feel in this moment? And I just do a quick inventory and it instantly brings me into the moment. Very powerful, quick attention exercise, I guess.
You went to Greenfield Elementary School here in Philadelphia.
Yes, I did.
Which you loved, and apparently so did many of the other children there. And there was the principal, Mr. Brown.
Yeah.
Who you say in many ways embodies what you have been talking about when it comes to children. He spent time getting to know us. He organized his day around, quote, being there. He was always happy to see us.
Yeah, he really did. And about 8 years ago, somebody found Mr. Brown on Facebook and announced Mr. Brown was alive and well and living on Facebook. And students from dozens and dozens of years all swarmed and friended him, and we had a reunion. And every student who ever passed through that school says that their experience gave them their identity and confidence for life. And it was because of Mr. Brown who practiced this. These were short bursts, but every time he saw you in the hall, he would be like, hey, Julie, how are you doing? How is such and such? And he knew who we were, what our interests were, who our parents were. He still remembered, by the way, at 90, names of everybody's
really?
Parents. Yeah.
That's impressive.
And sisters and brothers. He was just incredible. But he just made you feel known and recognized as the individual you are because he paid attention. And he was consistently there, not in big blocks, but you could always count on it. Lifelong legacy.
When I introduced you, I talked about how disorganized you were, and I basically took that from your own biography of yourself,
yeah,
or your autobiography. And it sounds like you were truly a disorganized person.
I was. I mean, I was physically very disorganized. I lived out of piles. I'd get bound to my room every 6 months to like clear a path from the door to my bed. So
it looked like that.
Oh, it was awful. I thought it was like a lot of treasures. I was a theater person. Everything could have been.
Were you a hoarder?
I don't think I was a hoarder. No, but I just didn't have any systems and everything looked interesting to me. And I didn't have a way to get it organized. I just couldn't figure out how to do it. But I learned to get organized. And I think my biggest fear was if I got organized, I would lose my creativity.
Oh, interesting.
I had a terror that being organized would be what you said before. Too structured, no spontaneity. Because I'm a very spontaneous person. I'm a very attuned person. I want to be able to like take in information. And I was terrified that I would lose that. I didn't. The opposite happened. When I got organized, I had more time to be creative. I had my head clear and I could find the stuff I needed to execute on my ideas. Whereas before I'd have an idea and wouldn't be able to find the stuff to make it happen.
And you actually lost someone's car?
I totally lost a car, a giant car. It was a huge car. I borrowed a friend's car to visit somebody at the airport who had a long layover, and I was late, and I dropped the car off in the lot, and I ran to the gate, and I came. I'm dating myself again, and I forgot where I had parked it, and I didn't even remember what it looked like. I knew it was big, and I thought it was red. It took me 4 panicked hours of circling that lot and trying the key in every single door that I could find. And then finally, a security guard took pity on me and drove me around.
Till you found the car.
And it was big, but it wasn't red. It was blue.
You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Roberta wanted to know, what do you do if your kids are grown now and you did all these things wrong when they were little? Yeah. How do you fix them now when they're adults?
I love that question, Roberta. If there was only one question, thank you for that question. That's exactly. Here's the deal. It is never too late to start, ever. Because we all just want to be seen and recognized by the people who matter to us, particularly our parents. I had a woman who was 42 years old who asked me this question at a talk I gave in Rhode Island. She said, my son is 15. I have not done any of this. I've been working. I've been arranging. I've been not doing the connecting. Is it too late? And I said, well, what about your own parents? I don't know what your relationship is with your parents and how connected you are. She said, well, my mom, every time I call, this is a 42-year-old woman, she tells me what I'm doing wrong. She lectures me. And I get criticized and I cringe every time I call my parents when my mom picks up. Then she puts my dad on and he says, hey, honey, how you doing? And I start crying and I feel like he understands me and he loves me. And I said, okay, if tomorrow when you called your parents' house, your mom said, hey, honey, how are you doing? Right. How would you respond? She said, that's all I want. And I said, if you're 42 and that would not be too late for you for your mom to switch, it's not too late for you with your 15-year-old son. It's not too late with a 26-year-old. This is about relating. We all just want to be seen and known and valued and valuable. And that is communicated with time asking and entering the person's world. So it's not too late. You can start tomorrow. Your kids will love it. They've been waiting.
Yeah, they've been waiting for this, Roberta. Thanks so much for your question. And Julie Morgenstern, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be here.
Nice
thank
to
you,
have
Marty.
You with us as well. And again, the book is called Time to Parent, Organizing Your Life to Bring Out the Best in Your Child and You. Julie Morgenstern, our guest on Radio Times today. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. And we want to close things out with a song. This is Irma Thomas, known as the Soul Queen of New Orleans, singing Time on My Side in a 1964 recording. Thanks for joining us.